Adam here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And sometimes you hear me at an unusual time, but this program is going to be so fantastical. That's a word. We're going to play it multiple times this week, next week, and probably till eternity. And you can always listen to this program and others on our esteemed website, WWGH1071.com, at a web browser near you. You can listen to WGH Talk on TuneIn, the TuneIn app on your smart device, mobile phone, as they say, or tablet, computer, or anything else that might be able to receive this and other stations. You can listen actually on your smart TV, TV smart enough to know this is the best broadcasting around. And, of course, you can always send me an email, adam at wwgh1071.com. We look forward to hearing from you. As we often are joined on these airwaves, I present to you Dr. Ron L. Feinman, where L stands for lots of great talk on presidentiality and other fun and interesting stuffy wuffy. I want to let people know, if you're not familiar with Dr. Ron Feinman, he is on with me a lot. He was on with Glenn. He has been on with Scott. We'll be on with Scott in the future. And he definitely is a person that it is prudent to listen to on these airwaves, as he is a wealth of knowledge of presidentiality and American history and all kinds of other good stuff. Now, interestingly, Ron, earlier this week, Scott spoke with a fellow person who is a presidential expert, someone that you are familiar with. In fact, you said you have one of his books, right?
Luke Nichter, yes. His book on Henry Captain Lodge Jr., yes.
Now, I was quite impressed that I figured you would know him. I mean, you presidentologists kind of know each other. So not
I don't know him personally, but I know of him, and I came across his book, and I decided to purchase it, yes.
Right, and he was on with Scott on Monday morning. The interview is available on our website, like most of our esteemed programs are. And you said you did read his book. Scott talked about the book relating to the 1968 presidential election. How do you compare his knowledge, Ron, to yours, and what did you think about his book?
Oh, I wouldn't try to make a comparison that way. I'm not egotistical about myself. He's a younger guy, but he's written quite a few books. You know, he's done quite a bit on Richard Nixon as well. So, I mean, he's very confident. I have no doubt about it, but I would not compare myself in any way to him. You know, we're different people, and we both have our own accomplishments.
Well, that's I guess that's pretty good to hear. So comparing him to yourself or other authors of presidential material, it's kind of a hard thing to do, but basically, is you're not really comparing apples to apples like we want to, is what you're saying.
Now, the only thing I will say, his book on Henry Captain Lodge Jr., who was U.N. ambassador under Eisenhower, had been senator from Massachusetts and was defeated for his seat by John F. Kennedy, which is interesting, and then ran with Nixon in 1960 for vice president, and that was a very strong ticket. I remember liking Lodge. And then, of course, he ended up as ambassador to South Vietnam under his former rival, Kennedy, and into Johnson, and then he tried for president himself. I always thought Lodge was a really solid Republican, and I actually remember telling students that in the 1960 election, we had Kennedy and Johnson against Nixon and Lodge, and I said they all ended up in the White House except for Lodge, and in a way, I've said this to students, I think Lodge might have been better than any of them if he had been able to make the White House, but he didn't.
So, he would have been a largely good president, you're saying?
I absolutely believe that, yes. And his grandfather, Henry Captain Lodge Sr., was, of course, famous senator in the early 20th century and worked with Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft and hated Woodrow Wilson and made life difficult for him on the Versailles Treaty, reading the whole treaty out loud and holding up a vote and preventing its ratification. It's very interesting. His grandfather was really a very important figure, as much as his grandson.
Well, sometimes we find that people's names are true to their political legacy. Like Tricky Dicky, we often refer to Nixon that way. Sometimes it just kind of fits in well, doesn't it?
And yes.
You would probably say that Donald Trump trumps all the other presidents in how bad of a president he was.
Well, I think Trump is about the worst president we've ever had, worse than Buchanan or Andrew Johnson. I wanted to mention, by the way, Henry Captain Lodge, had he become vice president, would have been, I think, the best Republican Republican vice president in the last 60 years, because there haven't been any really good vice presidents, other than maybe George H.W. Bush, maybe, but except for, and then he became president, but all the others were pretty horrendous. So Lawrence was really a star figure, a lot better than when Nixon in 1968 showed Spiro Agnew, a horrifying person to be VP, and we almost got stuck with him at the time of the Watergate scandal if he had not been found to be corrupt and forced out of office, and we got Gerald Ford as his replacement, which was a godsend.
So at least we got someone in the end who was a decent VP. He wasn't VP for very long, and became
but a decent man. Yeah. But Lawrence was really solid. You know, I remember 1960 as a kid saying, "Wow, this is going to be a tough combination to beat," because Nixon had qualifications. He had been an active vice president, and Lawrence was very solid. But even then, I said, Lawrence should be running for president, not Nixon, because I really had a good impression of Lawrence all along. So I think Luke Nichter's book is really very significant.
Yeah, we do encourage people to read the Presidentology Studies of Dr. Ron Fineman, whom I'm speaking with right now. A gentleman we just lost recently. We've talked about his legacy in the past. Mike, who has written the book about presidential insults, Mike Purdy, and other things that presidents have done which might not be considered to be in the gentlemanly capacity. And again, Luke Nichter, a new member of our triad of presidentologists, who, again, spoke with Scott earlier this week about the 1968 presidential election, and quite a fascinating talk, and you just never quite know, Ron, whom we're going to be speaking with on the station and exactly what this person may have to say, but certainly tune in to find out. That's always the best way.
One thing about Scott Spears, he gets everybody on. He does, and I'm very impressed that he got Luke Nichter on, and I have not heard the interview. I will have to listen to it, because, again, I don't know him personally, but I'm certainly fascinated by the fact that he was interviewed by Scott Spears. And I think I've asked you, I'm going to bring up the subject of Jimmy Carter, who is now, today's the 18th. He's 13 days away from being 99. I hope and pray he makes it. And I've asked you, I don't know if you have answered, has he ever in the past, Scott Spears interviewed Jimmy Carter years ago
Think so. I don't believe he's interviewed anyone who was president, is president, or might become president. Now, he certainly has talked to people who would like to be president. He does talk to a Donald Trump impersonator regularly. But an actual president, I don't believe so, but I would not put it past him, Ron. I mean, whenever I think that I've run out of all the people that Scott's going to talk to, he goes and has Bill Cosby on the air, or Dr. Ruth, or some other...
Yeah, Dr. Ruth is still around. She's amazing. She's in her mid-90s. That's right.
Yeah, Dr. Ruth.
I wanted to mention that tomorrow... On Wednesday, I'm doing a PowerPoint lecture at Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton on Jimmy Carter, 50 slides, and it's going to be an hour and a half presentation. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it, you know, because I do a lot of lectures, and this one's going to be on Carter's life, his entire life, not only before and during, but since his retirement.
Good old Jimmy Carter, great guy, you know, difficult presidency, and he's someone who his legacy certainly has improved, and after his passing, we would expect it to improve a little bit higher. An honest man, a very successful businessman, and, you know, I have an affection for his family, Amy, of course, his late brother, Billy Carter, the gas station owner and notorious beer drinker, and his lovely mother, Miss Lillian Carter.
Yeah, can I mention something about Miss Lillian, because I don't know if I've ever told you. You know, the thing about Jimmy and his wife, people ask, when did they meet? The fact is, literally within days after Rosalind's birth, she's about 3.5 years younger, but get this, who delivered Rosalind? Miss Lillian. She was a nurse. She, you know, she delivered Rosalind, and then a few days later, you know, she had her son, Jimmy, who was like 3.5. So in theory, they've not really known each other since babies don't really know each other, but they actually met when they were, you know, when she was only a few days old, Rosalind Smith. Can you imagine that?
Interesting. They were destined to be together, and they still are, and we wish them well. Jimmy Carter, you know, proud to say he's an American. He's the kind of person we need, not necessarily, again, the great president, but a great man and someone who is a role model, I think, for people looking to get into politics and just looking to be productive adults. We need more people.
And he's the ideal of a religious person. because a lot of people, you like to say, I'm, quote, a good Jew, a good Christian, a good Muslim, and they really aren't. He really is the model of being a good Christian. That's the way all people who claim to be religious or don't claim to be religious should think, the way Jimmy Carter dealt with other people his whole life. He's a wonderful human being. He really is.
Yeah, he's someone we look at as a good man. Whether or not you find his presidency to be a good one, I'm certainly not high myself on his presidency, but it was difficult. Not everything that happens during a man or woman's tenure in that high office is his or her fault, but it's something certainly to be discussed in the history books and in history classes, and something we can just look at as part of pop culture and the great history of the United States of America. Speaking of history classes, Ron, you are now well into your one class you're teaching at FAU in Florida about presidents. So I want to check in. How has that been going?
It's going very well. Actually, tomorrow I'm talking about the 1850s, the decade before the Civil War, and many people now on cable are saying the 1850s and now are very similar, the stress and tension that could lead to bloodshed and violence, which is, of course, horrifying. But the 1850s is something very instructive to talk about because the whole deterioration of the nation came about and led to Civil War. And now, 160 years later, we are in a very dangerous situation in many ways. And it's very worrisome. And we have such division, and we have more and more people now in Congress, feeling they're not safe on Capitol Hill, and they're not safe from each other. The parties don't get along. There's a lot of stress and arrogance and tension. It's very worrisome.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, speaking with Dr. Ron L. Fineman, our official historian, presidentologist, and interesting dude to share a microphone and studio with. Ron is the author of the blog that he publishes daily. We certainly encourage you to read it, as I do. Bookmark it. Share it with your friends. It'll take you typically 1 to 2 minutes to peruse. TheProgressiveProfessor.com. Let's dive into your blog, Ron, from Monday, 9/18/23. And once again, you speak about the mental deterioration of Donald Trump. He's clearly delusional and paranoid and continues to lie at a rate unmatched in American history by any American political leader. He talks about Barack Obama as if he ran against him in 2016. I saw that, Ron. Now, people talk about the mental capacity of Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden, and whether or not he has a diminished mental capacity, well, that's another topic of discussion. But it would seem like if Donald Trump thinks that he ran against Barack Obama in 2016, maybe an issue with his mental capacity. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, and also he said that Joe Biden's about to take America into World War II, which occurred 80 years ago. I watched him say it, and he didn't realize what he really meant is World War III, which is ridiculous because that's not going to be. He's trying to avoid it. But imagine he would say World War II, and he will take advice from his own attorneys. And I'm sure, I know that, I've read they're exasperated, and it's just ridiculous. The man also went after liberal Jews, I see, in the last 24 hours, and said they were bad for Israel, and he's attacking, the Jewish community, because a lot of them are Democrats, and he's just always divisive, and it's just a horrible human being. He really is.
So you feel Donald Trump is not a person who would be on the favorable end of the scale, just after we were talking about Jimmy Carter, a very different
oh my God.
Personality.
In fact, it makes Jimmy Carter look even better. And also, I want to point out, right around this date, in 1978, is the Middle East peace accords between Sadat and Begin. That, of course, occurred at the Camp David Accords. It's just around this day that they actually signed the agreement, and that transformed, whatever you say about the Middle East, it transformed the Middle East. Then Egypt and Israel recognized each other and accepted diplomatic relations with each other in peace. And they may have some disputes at times, but they still have that rock-solid, ability to talk to each other. So that's the most important thing I think that's happened in the Middle East since the beginning of Israel. And people don't want to give Carter the credit for it enough, unfortunately.
You don't hear too much about this, Ron, but what do you think Jimmy Carter, I mean, we know he's a gentleman, he's not going to go on and rant and rave. What do you think he thinks about Donald Trump? I mean, Donald Trump is someone who had not had elected political office before. In some ways, he's like a regular guy, but in some ways, he's out there. You know, Jimmy Carter, very successful businessman. I mean, like Donald Trump, and bit of a regular guy, and a colorful family, like Donald Trump's family. What do you think Donald Trump thinks about Jimmy Carter? I mean, both directions.
The two men have had some interaction, not now, but earlier. There was some back and forth between them. It seemed to be cordial. But Carter avoided saying much, because he was also getting to the point of age that he wasn't going to make many comments. But I'm sure he does not approve of him. But he did try to communicate with him and talk about trying to promote good international relations, because that really matters to Carter a great deal. But, of course, at this stage, he doesn't get directly involved. As far as Trump, I think he had basic respect for Carter, but he didn't have much interaction with him, overall. But I don't think the two men really have had that much to say about each other, partly because of Carter's advanced age.
Talking with Dr. Ronald Fineman here on WGH Talk Radio. Be sure to read his blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and check out his book about presidential assassinations. You'll learn something. Find out tidbits about presidents, Lincoln, for example, that you might not have been aware of previously. And again, listen to his programs here on The Talking Place with myself regularly and occasionally with the interviewer to the stars, Scott E. Spears.
I wanted to mention more about Carter, by the way. I don't know whether people are aware that we've only had a few presidents who were painters, who were artists. He's one of the four who actually is quite talented. He, George W. Bush, who was quite talented, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and Ulysses S. Grant are the four painter, artist presidents. So he even has that talent. And also, it has been said by experts, as much as you can judge IQs, and nobody's for sure ever going all the way back, that Carter may have the highest IQ of any president, right up there with maybe Thomas Jefferson and John Quincy Adams. Isn't that something?
Yeah, Carter, again, bit enigmatic, like a lot of presidents, different kind of president. But that's all part of the fun. We take a look at the presidents as men, how successful were they in office with their policies, what's their legacy, and how might their political positions have changed while they were in office. And, of course, you're really only as good as the people around you. Many people said Carter wasn't someone who picked good cabinet members, that being part of the issue. Donald Trump picking too many people in business, people with too much inside knowledge of, from a business standpoint, of what it is that they were doing. Some of Obama's picks, Tim Geithner, his Treasury Secretary, there was controversy about him. And, of course, Biden, certainly, Buttigieg and others, say what you want about them, as they were, in many cases, less than traditional choices. So we look at the cabinet members and the people surrounding the president, and that all kind of makes part of the picture, doesn't it?
Yes, I wanted to mention, since you brought up cabinet members, another statistic I tell my students, I say to them, which president had the least turnover of his cabinet? And, of course, they don't really know. Franklin Pierce had no turnover in his cabinet at all. He still was a disastrous president in the 1850s, but nobody left his cabinet. So he had the same cabinet for 4 years. Nobody else can claim that. And the president who's had the most cabinet turnover, Donald Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump had quite a bit of turnover. We do know that.
But imagine Franklin Pierce, who was also known as Handsome Frank. That was his nickname. He was handsome, considered one of the handsomest as far as looks. He actually had no turnover in his cabinet at all, but it didn't help him because he still was going through a very difficult time and is seen as in the bottom three. And actually, in the C-SPAN poll of 2021 of experts, he's tied for third from the bottom with, get this, Donald Trump. Exact same number of points. Only Andrew Johnson is lower, and the lowest is James Buchanan. But I think after recent events, I think Buchanan and Andrew Johnson will end up above Donald Trump, and he will be at the bottom and below Franklin Pierce as well.
Well, we shall see. Adam here on WGH Talk Radio, speaking with Dr. Ron L. Fineman about current events, politics, and a few other interesting tidbits. We have another Republican debate coming up. Do you think it'll be as juicy as the first one?
I would say as boring as the first one. I would not call the first one good. The only, I think the only person who came out looking better was Nikki Haley. I think Nikki Haley really did look better. It also made us aware of the lunatic, I think he is, Ramaswamy, a really cocky, arrogant young guy who thinks he should be president, and he's only 38 years old, and in some ways more scary than even Ron DeSantis, who I also think is horrendous. But I think Ramaswamy is getting a lot of attention, and he's getting, you know, and I think he is someone who wants to destroy the federal government, wants to get rid of five agencies. It's insanity. So, but I would say Nikki Haley looked much better, yes.
Yeah, we agreed. She came across as the voice of reason. We knew she was pretty moderate. She actually seemed even more moderate than I thought she was. So, I wouldn't mind seeing her in the Oval Office. I would like to see a female president. Just has to be one that I would be in approval of. I suspect she would probably pick another moderate as the VP, but that remains to be seen. She's not leading in the polls. Donald Trump is pretty much far and away leading.
Unfortunately, the Republican Party has sold its soul at this point, at least the voters, to Trump. And to me, there's something really seriously wrong with people. They could still back Trump after everything. Even if you voted for him the first time, or even the second, why would you still back him after what happened on January 6th? It's just beyond my understanding. It really is.
I mean, depends.
It's scary for the nation, I think.
Poll you look at, but I've seen polls that show if there were an election held today, Donald Trump would beat Joe Biden. But it's still very early. Can't really tell. Whatever the case is, all the debates, be they the Republican debate or the presumably Joe Biden and Donald Trump presidential debate, they will be spectacles. I mean, maybe boring in places, maybe frustrating, but certainly opinions will be provided. Verbal punches will be thrown. And once again, we will see what happens in the next chapter of American history. Adam here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, speaking again with Dr. Ron Feinman and some of his recent blog entries. TheProgressiveProfessor.com, which we encourage you, the listener, to read daily. Good stuff. You'll learn something and probably giggle a few times. A few days ago, Ron, you talked about Dianne Feinstein. Now, there's somebody who has had a long, distinguished career in politics. She was, I believe, the mayor of San Francisco a while back, and now she's a senator.
Yes. Except she became mayor when the mayor was assassinated in 1978.
And she's 90 years old and has health issues.
90 years old, yes. And she's not herself. There's still a good chance that she will not make it to the end of the term, either living or maybe will decide to resign. So the question is, who would replace her? And the governor, Newsom, has said he would pick a woman of color. That's what he said. But he's also said he would not pick someone who's running to be the new senator. So therefore, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who's really outstanding, but is in her mid to late 70s, I don't think she's going to make it to be senator, but since she's in the running to be the senator, he would not pick her. So you look and you say, who else could be picked? And the one that stands out, although I don't know if she would take it, she's older than Barbara Lee, she's older than Joe Biden, she's older than Mitch McConnell, is 85-year-old Maxine Waters, of all people, who's very outspoken. But whether whether she would agree to be, to become an interim senator for 1 year, the honor before she retires, or she just would want to run for the House again at age 86, I don't know. But the woman, you can't shut her mouth. She's always got something to say. And I think it'd be a very colorful year if she was the interim U.S. Senator, Maxine Waters. And I'm sure you know who she is.
I'm
sure, Adam.
Right? Outspoken type, yeah, it would be a fascinating replacement, so we shall see. You know, we do like and respect Dianne Feinstein, a very distinguished career. You know, seems like a fairly moderate, but it really is time. She does not look well, and she has physical and apparently mental limitations right now, and you really can't be a senator, especially in California, our most populous state.
40 million people she has to represent. Yeah, that's the problem. But as I wrote about Maxine Waters, she's outspoken and dynamic and stuff is no fools. So she's really gone after Trump a lot over the years. And her colorful nature has made her attractive to many, but she'll be past 86 at the end of 2024, so it would be a graceful way for her to leave if the opportunity arises to serve a limited time in the U.S. Senate. But I don't know whether she would accept it, but I would be the person I would be asking if Feinstein did leave.
Yeah, well, we shall see. Just when you think you figured everything out, a curve is thrown, so it's pointless to try to figure out exactly what's going to happen when you and I both know it's going to be something different, because it tends to be that way. Adam here.
Can I talk about something personal?
Yes.
Once, back in 2008, one of the people who served in the Senate from Florida resigned, and a new appointment had to be made to interim to the next election, which was, I think, a year and a half away or something like that, and the governor was Charlie Crist. And it came up in a class back in 2008, and somebody said to me, why don't you become the interim senator? And I said, well, I'm not looking for it, but I said if I was asked to serve, I would do it, but I don't want to run for the job. I just want to do it for a while and make a few speeches to get noticed. So a couple of them said they wrote letters to the governor to suggest me, but of course I never heard, but it was just so funny. That's the thought of being a senator for, you know, for maybe a year or a year and a half.
That would certainly be intriguing, wouldn't it?
It would have been. And as I said, I would have made sure I was interviewed by all the cable networks and give one speech on domestic policy and one on foreign policy, and I would say what I thought of the people I didn't like.
Well, that's the way to do it. Go ahead and spew forth opinions. That's what we like to hear.
Yes, it would have been a nice thing, but it was more of a joke. But they claimed they did write to the governor, but he didn't respond.
Speaking of Donald Trump, you know, and maybe something that you might consider somewhat negative, Ron, you wrote earlier in September about some horrendous vice presidential possibilities under Donald Trump. Now, some of the previous VPs that you are not fans of, we have Spiro Agnew, we talked about him earlier, under Richard Tricky Dicky Nixon. Dan Quayle, the infamous bad potato speller under George Bush, number one. Dick Cheney, the man you don't want to go hunting with, under George W. Bush, and Mike Pence, under Donald Trump.
Yes, let me give some justice to Dan Quayle. I think I've said this to you in the past, so I've mentioned, whatever you think of Dan Quayle, he told Mike Pence, you have to just count the votes, nothing else, Mike, to Mike Pence, and apparently convinced Pence not to go along with what Trump wanted. So I think Dan Quayle may have saved the nation.
Well, as long as you're not having a potato salad or French fries, I guess that's cool. You know, people both from Indiana, so a nearby state.
Yes.
And then we like somebody who is from the area. Just Mike Pence really rubbed me the wrong way during the debate. I was rather disappointed in him, but he doesn't really have a chance anyway, so doesn't.
No,
really
he has no chance, and his religiosity, I think, sure, he gets his followers, but it turns off most people. He's much too much about church and state combination, and we're not a theocracy. So, in a way, maybe it's good he never got to be president. He could have been briefly if Trump had been removed, but he wouldn't have been, it would have been after the election. He would have only served like a couple of weeks. But the man, I think, lives in a delusion, you know, about what he wants the world to be like, and it's not going to be the way he wants it.
We certainly agree that quite possibly the reason why John McCain didn't defeat Barack Obama was a poor choice of Sarah Palin as his VP. We like that he picked a female, and, you know, she's easy on the eyes, but is she qualified to be VP? Probably not, and that certainly was a negative influence on his ability to become president, and Barack H. Obama, with VP Joseph Robinette Biden, became the president instead.
And also Paul Ryan, I know he became speaker later, but interestingly, now Mitt Romney has been critical of Paul Ryan, you know, even though he was his running mate in 2012. So Mitt Romney really wrote a, you know, it's having a book published, and he's given an interview. He's really going after many Republicans as backing away from Republican tradition. But meanwhile, the Democrats have had Walter Mondale, who is, I think, the best vice president in history, as most experts would say, Al Gore under Bill Clinton, Biden under Obama, and now Harris. And I mean, by comparison, much better. Not saying they're perfect, but much better. But then we look at the short list that supposedly, especially mostly women that Trump's considering, that's horrifying. Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, Carrie Lake, who refuses to accept that she lost the gubernatorial election in Arizona in 2022, and Elise Stefanik, the chair of the Republican Conference, those four, and then, of course, Ramaswamy, who's flattering Trump a lot, and Florida African-American Congressman Byron Donald. So if any of those people are a heartbeat away, if government he got elected, we'd be in trouble. And I think if he did get in, it's unlikely he would make it through 4 years. So one of these people could end up as president, and you just can't make a comparison to the people the Democrats have had, or Henry Cabot Lodge, who was the running mate of Nixon in 1960.
So a motley crew of sorts on the list of VP possibilities for Donald Trump's second attempt, well, I guess third attempt at the White House, attempt to have a second term, non-consecutive. I do like Walter Mondale. I didn't run. I worked on his presidential campaign. But you think he really is the best VP ever, better than Truman and some others?
Well, Truman was only vice president for 82 days, you have to realize.
Right.
In 1945.
It was a short vice presidency. So
yeah, 82 days. Henry Wallace was the third term. We almost had Henry A. Wallace as president if FDR had died earlier or he had kept Wallace. So Truman, he was vice president, but basically not. I mean, only 82 days. But Mondale was given equality by Carter, because there's a story about when Mondale was asked by Carter, they didn't know each other, to be his running mate, he went to Hubert Humphrey, who had been, of course, LBJ's vice president, and not treated very well. And Humphrey said, you can ask him that if you want me to be, you know, the running mate, you got to give me, better treatment than I got from LBJ. You got to really be in on all the decisions. He asked Carter that, and Carter told Mondale, yes, you will be equal. And it wasn't just talk. They actually were great partners, and he was in on every decision. And there's no such thing as a co-president, but as much as you could say, he was almost like a co-president. And experts have said there was no vice president like Mondale, even though it was only 4 years, that, you know, he really was the most active and engaged and the best relationship, because ordinarily presidents and vice presidents don't always get along that well. And, like, really, do you think that Trump and Pence got along well? Not really. He just kept his mouth shut a lot, Pence. But Carter and Mondale really worked very well, and therefore there are those who would say he's the best vice president we've ever had.
The VP, Ron, is a fascinating office. Doesn't seem like he or she always does much, but you look at the personality and realize this person is one heartbeat away from the presidency. I'm certainly a Mondale fan, so I have no problem with that selection.
Oh, I like Mondale a lot. Yeah. And he lived, by the way, 41 years beyond the presidency. They were still both alive. The longest retirement of both the president and vice president still being alive. He died in early 2021. But now Carter's going to be 43 years if he makes it to January 20th and he's out of office, way past Herbert Hoover's 31 years way back in time. So, I mean, that team of Carter Mondale was an amazing combination. And again, there was the problem of the economy, I realize that. But honestly, in foreign affairs, he got the Panama Canal Treaty, he got the Camp David Accords. He was the best one-term, so by Carter, the best one-term environmental president by far. And that's not me saying it, that's experts saying it. He's right up there with Theodore Roosevelt and Richard Nixon on the environment, and they had longer time in office. So he had some real positives, but he also had, unfortunately, some bad luck, including the Iran hostage seizure, unfortunately. So that's why his rating has been lower than it should. And, of course, he lost re-election. If you don't get re-elected, you don't usually look as good in history anyway.
How do you think Kamala Harris and Joseph Robinette Biden get along?
I don't think they're as close as Carter Mondale. Yeah. I don't think so. It's hard to say. I think Harris just started to really speak up now in her third year. I mean, you got to realize a vice president can't act too assertive in any way to make the president feel maybe insecure. And I think she was feeling her oats, as you say. But I now see her, since the abortion decision that ended abortion, she's really come out, and she's coming much more, outspoken. And I think Biden may have had some problems with her in the beginning, maybe. But I think they've become a much better team, and I think she comes across much better now in her third year. And again, she's not perfect, but when you compare it to the Republican vice presidents, I think she looks pretty damn good. And if something happens and she ends up in the White House, she'll, of course, be attacked because, there'll be people always attacking anyway. But I do think that she would perform quite well. I really do. I'm not going to say she'd be great, but a lot of men aren't great in the office of vice president or president. They're certainly intelligent enough and smart enough, and she has good experience. She was Attorney General of California. She was also the prosecutor in San Francisco, and she was in the Senate. It's not like she has no background. A lot more background than, say, Sarah Palin had, as an example, or even more than Gerald DeFerraro had, earlier people who ran for vice president, much better than them, But, of course, nobody's perfect, but I think she would do a decent job. I'm not worried about if she had to take over. Hopefully, it wouldn't be necessary, but at least I feel she's competent.
I think her choice as VP would be fascinating. We've talked about this so many times, but would she pick a female? Would she pick a white person?
You mean if she was president?
Yeah, I just kind of fascinated.
No, she would pick a man, I think. I don't think it would be two women. That would be a little too radical if she was president by succession or whatever and then picked a woman. I don't see that happening. I really don't. But, you know, I don't think that. I'm not even sure that would be a good idea. I think that might scare the men.
Do you think it would be a white person?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think it'd be too radical to pick another person of color. And by the way, just for the record, and I tell my students, Harris is not the first vice president of color. And people look at me, really? Charles Curtis, senator from Kansas, who was Senate Majority Leader in the 1920s under Coolidge, just after, you know, at that time, was a Native American. People didn't even think about it, but he was Native American. So he was first person of color to be vice president.
Well, leave it to our official presidentologist for factoids like that. Dr. Ron Feinman here on WGH Talk with Adam. Few minutes left over and plenty of things to talk about. If you ever miss a program or you want to hear it for another time, of course, why wouldn't you? It's good stuff. Be sure to go to our website, WGH1071.com. Go to my section and you can listen to dozens of wonderful programs with myself and Dr. Ron Feinman, as well as Scott's section where he speaks with Dr. Feinman, and Glenn's section where he used to speak with him. Good stuff. And again, you'll learn something, you'll giggle, and probably have a question or comment of your own. You wrote an interesting blog, Ron, with some information that I wasn't previously aware of, about the 14th Amendment, Section 3. The Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871 could disqualify Donald Trump. Now, we've talked many times about Donald Trump not being on the ballot, not being qualified, again, rather legally qualified to be in the ballot, or qualified just the fact that he would not necessarily be a good president, about you thinking Mike Pence could have invoked a law that would allow Donald Trump to be removed from office. Of course, that didn't happen. But now you bring up this ordinance, I guess, from over 150 years ago, the Ku Klux Klan Act. Tell us about that and exactly how that comes in the picture about possibly disqualifying Donald Trump from running again.
The Ku Klux Klan, of course, came into being right after the Civil War and it was raining horrible bloodshed and violence on African Americans. And under President Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, whose rating, by the way, has gone up dramatically in ratings. He used to be much lower. He's now right in the middle of the pack, like number 20. He used to be in the 30s. He actually promoted that alone. Of course, the Congress had to go along, and it was a Republican Republican Congress, very different Republican Congress than now, passed a series of enforcement acts to deal with the terrorism and violence of the Klan, and it was used to prosecute people, you know, and also anyone who spoke up in favor of the Klan or was in any way promoting violence and bloodshed or involved in insurrection, and they considered the Klan was involved in insurrection, could be prosecuted. So the thought is, and I'm not sure it'll work out, legal scholars, many people think that it could be utilized to prevent Trump from being on the ballot. But at the end, even if that is done in some states by the secretaries of state, it would probably go to the Supreme Court, and they would have to decide, and that's the worrisome thing. Would the court do the right thing, which I think is not allow him to run, or would it be because three have been appointed by Trump, and there's six Republicans on the court, and it's the most right-wing court since the 1920s? Would they indeed say no to it? So that we don't know, but I think there's going to be a case brought to the Supreme Court under the Ku Klux Klan Act, and also under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, and the Supreme Court will make the final determination, and if they're going to do the right thing for democracy, these people should not. I don't think I would like to think Roberts would not go along with allowing Trump to do it. That's four votes, and I would hope at least Kavanaugh or Barrett or Gorsuch or maybe more than those would go along with that. The only ones I would give up on are Thomas and Alito. I'm sure I think they're lost cause, but we don't need all of them. We just need five votes, and we'll have to see what happens. But it's going to come up soon because the first, the first voting is 4 months away, the Iowa caucuses, and the point is, if you're going to prevent people from being on the ballot, you got to do it now. So it's got to be done soon.
So it's a possibility, and something else we can wait and see about. Just a few minutes left here, Ron. Wanted to ask about this blog entry. We've talked about it off the air a few times. A proposal to increase membership in the U.S. House of Representatives after 2030. Now, the House has had 435 members for 110 years since 1913, capped officially at that number since 1929, and exception temporarily of additional seats in 59, with Alaska and Hawaii being admitted as states. Do you think that's needed? Will it get a little too dilute? Will it help the gerrymandering that comes up a lot? What are your thoughts, and what's the chance it's actually going to happen?
Well, the argument is that each House seat represents too many people compared to what it used to be. You know, it used to be the beginning, 35,000 people were the constituents of each of the 65 original members in 1790. Now they're about 770,000 average for the, you know, based on 2020 census figures. So if there's no additional seats, it'll be 875,000, almost a million in 2040, and the argument is that there's a need to have better representation. The only thing I'm concerned about is how would they seat all these people in the House chamber? I don't know if they would have enough seats if they added 150 to make it 585 instead of 435. And then the issue of also office space for these people, would they have to create another House office? I don't know, a House office building? I don't know. It's hard to say. And the electoral college would change. Instead of 538, it would be 688 electoral votes, and you would need 345, not 270, to win the presidency. So I don't know, but the argument is that the House is not representative anymore because it has too many people per seat. On the other hand, the Senate is very unrepresentative because you have California has 40 million people, two senators, and then you have Wyoming that has 500,000 has two senators. So the Senate itself is not, it's not a democratic small-d institution, unfortunately. So I don't know. But this is a proposal. They have time to plan it, but if they were going to do it, it would have to be after the next census and after the reapportionment that would come after 2030.
So it's another wait and see. It would certainly change the landscape of American politics, but with the growth of this country, just more people, people migrating from some states to others, maybe it's time. My opinions on this, Ron, are kind of mixed. I'm not really sure. Hate to burst that bubble, but maybe it is time.
Well, I just want to say that many people think our whole system is bad because the Senate is so unrepresentative the way it's set up, but it's because of the extreme development of some areas that have so much population. You know, the top 10 states have much more, like 70% of the population, and that they only have, you know, 20 seats. And, of course, the Electoral College, many people think we should have a way to get around it, that it should be popular vote like every other election in America and like every other election in every other country. It's not based on electors, it's based on popular votes. So we have a problem with our Constitution, but if we get a constitutional convention, anything could happen. It could go more extreme to the other extreme, to the extreme right. So I don't know. It's a tough thing to know how to deal with the Electoral College and the Senate long term. But the House is supposed to be more representative, and that's why the argument is we need to, you know, make for more seats. And that would probably last another 100 years, and then we'd have to figure out what to do in 2230, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree we need a routine adjustment due to population and due to population shifting. So we'll see. You know, it just makes things more interesting, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. It's never boring. And I find every day getting up and writing and being on the radio with you and teaching and lecturing, I've been doing this for a half century, a little bit more, and I say, I love this. I want to do this to the end of time. I mean, I think it's not work to me. It's fun. You know, it's enjoyable. I just love what I think about and what I deal with every day all these years.
Well, it's good to love your job, and we certainly love having Ron here with us on WGH Talk Radio. Thank you again for joining us, sharing these microphones. Always a fun time, always a giggle or two. Once again,
yeah,
folks,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, it's good. Don't want to miss my dulcet tones, do you? Be sure to check out Ron on Facebook. Check out the Progressive Professor. Become a fan, become a follower. Check out his book about presidential assassinations, and be sure to read his daily blog, the ProgressiveProfessor.com. And again, Adam here, if you ever want to send me an email, I would love to hear what you have to say. Questions, complaints, comments, suggestions, all welcome. Doesn't have to be a positive correspondence. But again, if you want to say, hi, Adam, how are you doing? You are the best radio host in the universe. I'm certainly not going to complain. Email address again, adam@wgh1071.com.